Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2014. Lecture 15, delivered on March 20, 2014. The title of this lecture is Cost of Capital.
Today, the cost of capital. Whenever you take on funding for your company, there's going to be a cost to it. No one is going to give you anything for free, and even the profit you make at the bottom line has a cost to it. Because whatever you do with that profit, you could have done something else with it. And therefore, even the money that's at the bottom line of your financial statements, or in more realistically in finance, your cash, free cash flow, is coming at a price to you. Look, okay, if I've got money that comes in at the bottom line of my company, let's say profit in the accounting sense, but it's really more free cash flow in the finance sense. Okay, I could take that money. Now, I could give it to my shareholders as a dividend. But if I give it to them, then it's not available to me in my company to do things with. So the cost of that money, if I give it my earnings, if I give it to my shareholders, is the return that I could have gotten by investing it in the company. You might want to think of that as like, you know, your return on equity. Okay, well, let's keep the money. Okay, I've got the money. Well, if I reinvested in the company, then that means that I didn't put it in the bank and earn interest in the bank. Or I didn't invest it in something else that I could have, some high-yielding portfolio or something like that. So by putting it back into my company, I'm giving up what else I could have done with it. Yeah, go ahead. Say that again.
Just the economic cost?
Yeah, that's exactly right. The reality of it is that you say, well, that's not really money, but it is in a material sense. Because, look, even in my own little business, if I get money that comes down to the bottom line, like that's really ever going to happen, well, I could put it back into my inventory or into new equipment and all that. But if I do that, that's money that I don't put into some kind of an investment in a with my banker or something like that. So I'm giving up something by doing what I do with it, no matter what I. Or if I put it into the bank, then I'm not reinvesting it, so I'm giving up that possibility. No matter what you do, you are going to give up something for it. Now, with debt, you see the cost very clearly. The bankers are going to charge you interest. You see the debt. And that's why the debt formula is the cost of debt capital is easy. I mean, it's a joke. The ones for preferred stock and common stock are a little bit more detailed, but they're not too bad either. But understand this. Nothing is free. Nothing. Remember what I told you. Even if you think love is free, you are wrong. You will find that out someday, son. Yes, you will. So, without further ado, the first thing that I want to bring up is that there is a cost of capital. Cost of capital. But capital is really a generic word. Capital comes in different forms. So what we want to know are the costs of the different components of capital. And then we can put those together in a weighted sort of way. In other words, if we use 40% debt and 60% equity, well, the total cost of capital would be 40% times the cost of debt plus 60% times the cost of equity. So there will be, the weighted average cost of capital isn't anything too big, but let's go through. There is debt. But the problem is that saying even debt is being too broad. Because if you go to any bank whatsoever as a business and say, I want to borrow money, They're going to say, okay, we would charge you a certain percentage, say, for the first $1 million. But then if you need to borrow more than that, say you wanted to borrow $500,000 more, we're going to charge you more interest for that. Well, what do you mean? Why would you do that to me? Because you see, there comes a point where as you gather more and more debt, you become riskier. I mean, $1 million, you'll be able to pay that off easily. You got the cash flow for that. Earnings before interest and taxes. But as you push your amount of service load up, how much interest you're paying, you get closer and closer to the point where you can't pay it. If your let's say your earnings before interest and taxes is $2 million. Okay, great. Now this year I owed $150,000 in interest. No big thing. EBIT over interest in that case is $2 million over $150,000 in interest. Easy to pay it. But the next year I borrow more money, so I've got more interest to pay. Let's say that in the next year I get aggressive and I have $500,000 in interest to pay. And my EBIT is only $2.1 million. Suddenly I've got a closer shave. It's not too bad yet. But the banks are going to say, yeah, but that's a volatile thing. Your earnings before interest and taxes goes up. And even though you're still down here, you might get too close for us to really be happy. And if your debt goes up here, well, there's a really good possibility that you're going to go belly up on us. So they're going to start charging more because you become riskier. The last dollar you lend them is going to be riskier than the first dollar you lend them. So there are going to be what we would call tiers of capital. Tier one, tier two, on out. Now in this class, we'll do two tiers. $250,000 will charge you 7%. Anything more than that will charge you 12%. But it can actually get more serious. And I've seen it where my own experience was I saw three tiers once. But I've seen two tiers rather commonly. And then there's another thing about debt that makes it very attractive to companies. It's this. Interest payments are deducted before you calculate your taxes. That means that you don't pay the entire amount of interest because you are shielding EBIT. So if I've got, let's say, $2 million EBIT, and I've got, let's say, $200,000 in interest, I'm taxed only on $1.8 million, not on $2 million. The interest is a tax shield. And that is important because the after-tax cost of debt, DAT, and it could be 1, 2, or whatever, and I'll just put a little K for whichever one it is, doesn't matter, is actually going to be the debt at that tier that the bank charges you times 1 minus the company's tax rate. That makes debt cheaper because you're shielding it. It's just like homeowners. You get to deduct your mortgage interest, which makes it so that if your actual amount that you are paying in interest is not as bad because you're shielding your ordinary income to the extent of the interest that you pay. So let me give you a really quick example. Oh, I was writing on the glass. Mother of God. Oh. And I can't tell if it was the marketing people who did that because this is finance. My ass is great grass. There is no other finance class in here. Can't you tell? I'm the only sorry son of a bitch you'll put in one of these dog rooms from business. Oh my God. I have got to think real fast here about how I can blame this on someone. Ow, God. I should have listened to that thing when it was sending shock through my man armpits. God. Jesus. Okay, I am so in trouble. Give me just a second here while I... God. As if I didn't have enough problems here with this system and its electricity. Oh, there you go. You know what? There. Oh, cool. The marks are gone. That's for documentation on this podcast. They're not there, see? Yeah. Cost of capital. Yeah. And it's all out of focus. There we go. Cost of capital. I was on such a roll there, and now, okay, debt. So, and we have the tiers, and the debt, the after-tax cost of debt is the banker's debt charge to us, interest rate to us, times 1 minus the tax rate of the company. This would also apply to individuals as well. Because like I said, your interest on your home mortgage is deductible the same way as interest on corporate debt is deductible. So let me show you something here. Bank wants 8%. Your company, now you understand our tax system is progressive. So as you make more, the last dollar is charged more. Your company is in the 20% marginal tax bracket. In other words, the last dollars it earns are taxed at 20%. That would mean that your after-tax cost of debt for the company would be the 8% times 1 minus 0.20, which would mean that your after-tax cost of debt is 6.4%. But here's the part that's bullcrap. Suppose that we compare this little corporation, which has a low marginal tax bracket, with Megacorp. Megacorp is in the 35% marginal tax bracket because it makes a lot more profit. EBIT, rather, let's say. So Megacorp, at the same bank, with the same interest rate the bank is charging, will have an after-tax cost of debt of 8% times 1 minus 0.35. And if you do that one, okay, we're going to wait for this. 8% times 0.65, as this this actually is booting. Oh, goody, it's Windows. Hang on, bear with me here. I don't know why I'm doing this. Five point 2%. can't even get off that. Okay. The large corporation has a lower after-tax cost of debt than the small corporation does, which means that by our tax code, large corporations are favored within debt capital. And it's the same thing that happens in home ownership. One of my specializations was urban finance, which is involves real estate. A wealthy family that buys a home and gets a loan on it, their tax shield, because they're in a higher marginal tax bracket, is significantly more than the tax shield of a lower income family in a lower tax bracket. So two families, one upper middle class in the, let's say, in the 34% marginal tax bracket, in the 34% marginal tax bracket, on a home mortgage that was, let's say, at 6.99%, their after-tax cost of the mortgage is going to be 6.99% times 1 minus 0.34. That's a wealthy family. Now you've got a lower income family. That very same mortgage rate for them is going to be, if they're in the 15% marginal tax bracket, is going to be 6.99% times 1 minus 0.15. So the shield for the wealthy family means that they pay 0.66 times 6.99%, or about 4.61% for their loan. The low-income family on a 6.99% mortgage pays 5.94%. For the same loan. The same loan. So in other words, owner-occupied housing is much more advantageous to the rich than to the poor in a progressive tax system where we allow mortgage interest deduction. This is a problem across businesses and individuals and families, that when you have this allowance for deducting interest before taxes, you are going to face the reality that it is a better deal for the powerful, high-income corporations and people than it is for the small corporations and the lower-income individuals as well. It's just the reality of the system. And it gives them a powerful advantage because it's more, that means the debt is attractive to larger corporations than it is to small corporations. And that means that the advantages to debt are more attractive to large corporations than they are to small corporations and to people as well. Hence, as you take on debt as students, you will come out in lower income tax brackets, for unless you're in accounting, of course, damn you. But you will come out with significant debt, and it will not have a whole lot of shield on it. But if you were to pay that debt when you were deeper into your high incomes, as you will be in your 40s, when your tax bracket is high, the shield would be significant to you. So you should have gone to college after you'd made your fortune when you're in your 40s or 50s. Of course, you wouldn't have known how to have fun then, so there you go. Let me move on here. I'm going to bring this back here to cost of capital. Now, these are the component costs of capital I'm talking about here. Component costs of capital. So each tier of debt when you do it for calculations, for project analysis, you need to make sure that you know all the different tiers of debt that are going to happen, the different levels of debt that are going to go on in your company. And then you can calculate the cost of the capital at each level. You understand that as you proceed forward in a project, as you're borrowing more money, what's going to happen is that you might have a good return on your project versus the debt that you're taking on for it, but as the project proceeds, your debt cost is going to keep going up, and it's going to get closer and closer to the return on the project, which makes you, that's the killer. If the project ever becomes worth, if the cost of funding the project ever goes above the return the project is going to get, you shut down. As a matter of fact, you don't start it. And that's where we're going today. But let's go here. Now, the alternatives to issuing debt, a company can borrow money from banks, but it could also issue equity, take on new owners and have them give the company money. The two ways that it could do that are through preferred stock, which, like I said, these days is just not too popular. And I will tell you right now that in the problems that I'll give you, we won't use any preferred stock because you just don't see it all that well. You just don't see it as normally. Preferred stock. Now, what's the cost of selling preferred stock? Well, there is a cost to it. If you take on owners, the thing about debt is that debt goes away. You pay the bill and eventually you're out from under it. The thing about owners is that they are there forever. They are also, the cost of taking on owners is going to, of having owners, let's put it this way. The cost of having owners is higher than the cost of having debt holders. It's just the reality of it. You see, because debt holders get the first claim to cash flows. They have to be paid before there's ever any dividends or reinvestment or anything like that. So the risk that debt holders face is lower than the risk that stockholders face. Therefore, you're going to have to pay the stockholders more for being with your company because they don't get any money unless all the bills have been paid. Now, with preferred stock, let me show you that formula that I gave you before. You remember that preferred stock formula? And I'll put the price of preferred stock is the dividend over K. You remember that? The perpetuity, because you'll pay this dividend forever to the preferred stockholders. And this K is the discount rate for preferred stock. Well, all I have to do is rearrange that, and I find out that the cost of preferred stock will be the dividend that's paid over the price of the preferred share. That's the cost of preferred stock. It's very easy. I look at the dividend that the preferred stock has to pay as a dollar amount, and I divide that by the price of the stock, and there's my cost of preferred stock. And then there's common stock. Common stock is going to be the most expensive of all of your stock, and it comes in two flavors. There is the common stock cost for your existing shareholders, and then there's the cost of common stock to get new shareholders. If my stock is selling at $40 a share, that's one thing. There's going to be a cost to that money that belongs to the owners. But if I have a broker sell new stock for me, I'm not going to get $40 a share. The underwriters are going to take out a cut, maybe $4 for every share, something like that. That means that to raise every dollar of new common stock money is going to cost me more than my existing shareholders do. Someday you're going to be married, and you're going to be a hot property among women. But you're going to have to think about it. You've got a wife. It's going to cost you a lot more to get your first mistress. I mean, seriously. I mean, you got to buy her dinner. Maybe even a decent dinner. You're going to have to wine and dine and schmooze. It's going to cost you more than that loving woman that's at home waiting with the rolling pin to beat your ass back to the Stone Age. It's just the reality of it. New is going to cost more than what you have. Gaining anything new is going to cost you a fortune in some cases. Look, oh well, I'll get into that in a minute. But here's where we have to do a little bit of twisting around, and I won't do the algebra of it, but you remember that price of common stock is D1 over K minus G, and K was the discount rate we calculated from the CAPM. We can do this, rearrange this formula, and remember the D1 was equal to the dividend now times 1 plus G. Remember that problem on the exam?
Yeah, man, I got it wrong.
Well, don't worry. Actually, I was surprised at how many of you got that right or got close. Some of the reason you got it wrong was just because you calculated the discount rate wrong. But anyway, look, if I rearrange that to solve for the cost of stock, the cost of common stock will be D1 over K sub over the price plus G. Just rearranging algebraically that formula. Okay. That is existing common stock. New common stock is going to have a problem because you don't get the price. As the company, you have to pay the float to the investment bankers. So that is existing common, and this really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Trust me, if this is looking like, what the hell is he doing? It works better once you start to do a problem, and that's why we do this problem, is so that you begin to say, I see how this is going. Okay, but if you are taking on selling new stock, to get money for your company, you wouldn't have the price down here. You would have the price minus the float. Now, the float can be given to you as a dollar amount. I could say, well, it's $40 a share of stock, so if they sell any, they're going to have to pay $4 for each share that they sell to the investment bankers. Or I could give it to you as a percentage. Usually, in more realistic practice, we talk about it as a percentage. We'd say, okay, the bankers, the investment banking syndicate that's going to sell the stock wants a total of 8%. So you take the price minus 8% of the price. So you see that what happens is by subtracting this float off, I put S there, I meant N. That's not an S there, that's an N. And it's not even giving up. That's an N. Cost of new stock. The subtraction of that float causes that cost to go higher. Yeah. Float is, sorry, I kind of threw that one by. Float is the word we use for how much we're going to charge to sell this common stock. In other words, let me give you a real world example of it from my own time in business. There was this, I might have already told you this story, but I was with this group that brought, it was what we call rainmakers. They would bring money to companies, little startups or companies that were desperate for money. And they would step in and they would say, okay, we got money for you. We'll bring it to the table. Now, God knows where they were bringing it from. Well, unfortunately, I began to find out, so I got out of it. But they said, they told me, we want to meet you at the Atlanta airport. You come down. I was more the financial person. I would put the numbers together. And we met at the Atlanta airport, and they said, we're going to talk to a guy who has this brilliant idea. He's going to take up all of these old jets that are now ending their service life as passenger jets, and he's going to start a delivery service using those jets. And essentially, he said that he's already got his contacts with a couple of the major package delivery companies. And what he needs is money to get this thing underway. So we went to this backwater place. It was already a little after dark when we got there. And there was this house trailer somewhere in the back bowels of the airport at the time. And we went in, and it was the weirdest thing because there were just stacks of manuals everywhere. And there was this guy with this white beard and these piercing blue eyes and this cigar. He said, "Gentlemen, come in." Weird guy. I mean, you know, and then he kept staring at me, and he started talking about what he was going to do. And I got the idea of it, and I started throwing some numbers together. And then he starts pointing the cigar. "You have the vision, don't you? Get away from me." No, he said that with those piercing blue eyes. I was just kind of creeped out. But all those manuals, he had created those to get through all the layers of FAA approval. We came up with a number. And it was, I came up with a number, and he said, "That's what I have in mind." Okay, $25 million. That'll get the aircraft. That'll get us the hangar space. That'll get us all of the startup costs. We'll get it done. And he said, "Okay, and so essentially you're going to owe $25 million to our people." That's what one of the Momo boys said. "But you're not going to owe $25 million. You're actually going to owe $30 million because we're going to keep $5 million. So you will owe $30 million, but you're going to get your $25 million. And he just, "I'm not going to do that. You're putting me in debt $5 million more than I need, and that's going to kill me." And, of course, the routine is easy. We all just get up and walk out. "Thank you for your time." And then what we do is one of the Momo boys stays lagging behind, walking more slowly, looking back. And we're marching to the car, and the nice car we had, make it look real and all that, which it was, sort of. But, of course, then he came out, and the one who was the hook turns around and says, "What?" And they stand and they start talking. And he yells to us, "Can you wait a minute, please? Please, listen, guys, come on, wait." So he's over there talking with them for a while, and finally comes over and he says $4 million. And so we look a little exasperated, and then we walk back over, "Let's get it done." He was $4 million in debt, but he was so happy because he almost lost any dream of having his company. Got the idea? As it turned out, the whole thing didn't. It was rejected by the FAA because it turned out this guy had been in prison because he was caught landing at a remote airfield in Louisiana with a DC-3 full of pot, which he was hauling for the CIA because they would provide the pot, he would get it to the dealers in the United States, get the money, and get it back down to them so that they could kill people down there. But when he said that to the people who caught him, he said, "I work for the CIA." No one is, "Yeah, sure." No one acknowledged. He went to prison for 3 years. That was back in the late 70s, early 80s. And so the FAA said, "We're not going to let a convicted criminal who has fantasy stories about working with the government." So that was the end of that deal. Anyway, yeah. Let me kill this. Okay, so here we go. Here's the problem. You're going to, as a company, have projects submitted to you by different teams, different departments. You're going to have, like, for example, let's say it's a real estate company that builds apartment complexes. Okay, we got one. The return on this project would be 18%. And that one is going to cost us, return on the project is going to be 18%. And that one is going to need $8 million. And then we got another one that'll pull in 16%. Now remember, you have to put these in order from the best to the worst. And that one is going to pull in 16%, and that's going to cost us only about $2 million. And then we got this one that we're looking at. It'll pull in 12%, and it requires $5 million. Okay. We put them in order, And we actually draw that chart right there. It's called the investment opportunity schedule. We list them in order from the best to the lowest, how much each will cost, and then we chain them. Get the best done, and then we do the next one, and then we do the next one. But here's the problem, is that your weighted average cost of capital is going up. And the whole trick and what we're doing here is to find out when it jumps. So let's say your weighted average cost of capital, all the different capitals that you used mixed together, at first is going to run you 10%, and you're going to be able to pull out $5 million at 10%. Well, obviously, you're doing good. But then the next amount of capital that you're going to pull out, and you can do, let's say, oh, I don't know. Let's do $4 million on that. It's going to cost you 12%. Okay, we made it through the first project. We're good. It's done, and it didn't cost us as much as we're going to get from it. Looks like we're doing okay on the second project. But let's say that the next time that the cost of capital jumps, it jumps to 17%. And we can get all the money we want from there on at 17%. So in other words, the second project started making, and we would make more from it than it cost us, but it ended costing us more than it will make us. If there's even a dollar of the cost of capital that's above the return on the project, you don't even start the project. You stop. This project is rejected. This one is obviously rejected too. You don't even start those projects. You follow with me? Well, wait a minute. Are you telling me that we have spent $8 million, let me do another note. You're telling me that we have spent $6 million on a project. All we need is another $500,000. That $6 million cost us 10%. The project delivers 12%. Yes. But you're telling us the last $500,000 of this project is going to cost us more than 12%. We don't do the project. That's exactly right. You don't even start the project if the last dollar costs more than the return on the whole project, period. The marginal dollar is all that matters. And it's hard, and you find companies that say, you find people in companies that are not taught finance, or they're not well taught in finance, and they say, that's ridiculous. We've spent all this money, and all we're going to do is have to borrow $500,000 above what the project returns. Really, why are we rejecting it? It's simple. The last dollar is all that matters. Think of it this way. You're thirsty, really thirsty. And I got this tall glass of crystal clear water. It's delicious water from a spring in Malaysia. There's an airplane floating in the spring, but that's another story. Real problems for real people. Okay. But you look at this beautiful glass of water. I can drink this whole thing. But then you say, down there at the bottom, what is that tiny little thing down there at the bottom? Is that a turd? Yeah, but it's just at the bottom of the glass. Are you going to drink the glass of water? Hell, oh. Not thirsty enough for that, noob. You see, you're not going to drink the water because the last drop was poison. And that's exactly how we do it in finance. I don't care if it's just a few bucks that are going to cost us more than this project delivers. You drop the whole project. You drop the whole project. So that's where we're going with this. You're going to create an investment I'm going to give you projects. You reorder them from the best to the worst. as a list, and then you draw in the lines one after the other. The best one will do, and then when that one's finished, how much that one is, then from there we start on the next one. So we see a total amount of money that could run out. And then from there, we then start to build this marginal cost of capital, MCC, curve. It's not a curve. Back when you were in high school, in math in high school, do you remember ever doing stepwise functions where they had you do those graphs that were like steps, stepping stones instead of like smooth curves? Sometimes they still teach you, sometimes they don't. But at the time, you kind of think to yourself, well, where would I ever use that? This is one of the places where you use it. MCCs are steps. You spend a lot of money, and then all of a sudden, the cost jumps for the next dollar, and then you ride there, and then the cost jumps for the next dollar. That's how it works. So here's what I'm going to do here. I'm going to hand out this problem for you to work on, and we're going to go through some stuff together. And I'm going to explain what I'm doing as we go along. Take just one. Don't be greedy. There's plenty for everybody here. Just pass those down and up and around the grinder. Is there some reason why this keeps doing this? I feel weird. This cord keeps hanging down like this. Here you go. Go ahead and just hand those up on around your side here. And while that's going on, let me explain something about how corporate finance works. You are going to have different resources of money. There's going to be the money that is left over in accounting. You'd call that your net income, your earnings. You can use that to spend on projects. You're also going to be able to borrow money from banks to spend on projects. You're also going to be able to spend money, if you get desperate, you can sell common stock. And there's a source of money. However, in the world of debt and equity, we have what is called optimal capital structure. Optimal capital structure is the combination of debt and equity that is the cheapest for the company. The mix or combination of debt and equity with the lowest weighted average cost of capital. Average cost of capital. We designate that WACC, WACC. Okay. In other words, you see, if all I use is, let's say this is the percent of debt. The percent of debt in the company's capital structure. If all I use is equity, if I do not borrow any money, then my weighted average cost of capital is the cost of equity. But because debt is cheaper than equity, as I begin to put some debt into the mix, my weighted average cost of capital begins to fall. But there comes a point where the banks say, we're a little worried. We're going to start charging more for debt. And eventually, if you use too much debt in your capital structure, your weighted average cost of capital begins to rise again. At 100% debt, it can be a staggering cost. The low point is where your mix of debt and equity, maybe 40%, 60%, 30%, 70%. It's different for different companies. And we don't do that in this class, but we do that. That's a little bit beyond this. But this right here is called the optimal capital structure, the best mix. So you see in that problem where it says this company has determined that its weighted average cost of capital is something debt and something equity and all that. Are there any of those left? I'd like to have one, too, to look at. I use them all? Okay, cool. Someone will have to tell me the debt numbers and all that. But anyway, so let's say, what was it in that company? 35% debt and 60% equity, 65% equity, what was it? Okay, it's 35% debt and 65% equity. So in other words, when you come to me for a dollar for a project, I'm going to take 35 cents of borrowed money, and I'm going to take 65 cents of earnings, and that's how I will give you the money for the dollar you need. I won't give you one or the other. I will always, always pay for everything with the mix. Okay? So at any given time, I am never going to actually just use debt. I'm never going to actually just use equity. I am going to blend them together in order to pay for any project that I do. So now, are there any of those left anywhere in the room? Oh, there. Oh, thank God. I was going to say there can't be 200 students here today. Thank you. I'll grab some over here. And what I'm going to try to do here is I'm going to show you how to do this just like a mechanical exercise so that once you get through it, you can begin to see, okay, I understand what's going on here, why we're doing the things that we're doing on this. Okay, so in this problem, what's going on is the first thing is I give you a narrative. I describe a scenario to you. In this case, Habitable Places has a capital structure that's 35% debt and 65% equity. That's been decided for us by the gurus who do the optimal capital structure thing. The managers consider this to be optimal, and net income is $1.2 million. Okay, so in other words, this company, coming down to the bottom line, has available for the shareholders, $1.2 million. Now remember that most companies, well not most, but a lot of companies will give some of that to the shareholders as dividends. So once we find what the dividend is, we're going to have to take that away before we can talk about what money is available for actual reinvestment. So in this case, it says here, I'm going to switch over to the document camera now, hoping that it comes on here. But it says in this case that there are 40,000 shares of common stock outstanding. Now, we look around, and they just declared and paid a $5 per share dividend. So right off the bat, we know that this company no longer has $1.2 million to reinvest in projects. It has $1 million. 40,000 shares times $5 a share. This company has just given up $200,000. So we know right off the bat that the equity that this company has is $1 million. Don't ever forget that. Always take away any dividend that I throw at you. Okay, now, from here, I'm going to switch it over here to this one so that we can go forward with this. Now, we're going to look around here, and we're going to see that the loan company has said, all right, if you borrow up to a quarter of a mil, we're going to charge you 10%. But if you go over a quarter of a mil, we're going to charge you 12%. So the first thing we're going to have to do is say, all right, our cheaper debt, I wish I could get those lights to be a little bit stronger. Is there any way to get that a little bit brighter? I don't know, maybe. Oh, this light here isn't on. Hang on here. Bear with me. Lamp up, base. Well, that helped a lot. Yeah, that's good too. Okay. Yeah, maybe there. I can keep that. It's a little brighter. Okay. So, what we first are going to do is get the cost of our cheaper debt, the after-tax cost, which would mean that the after-tax cost of debt, I'm sorry, that's a K, not a D. I wrote D on the other one. The after-tax cost of debt level one is going to be 10% times 1 minus the company's marginal tax bracket, which if I look around here, where the hell is it? What's the company's marginal tax bracket? Do you see it? 40%, is that what it says? Oh, there it is. Okay, minus 0.40. So the cost of the first level of debt for this company is 6%. So we can borrow up to $250,000 and mix that with equity at 6%. The next cost of debt, and again, do this just like a mechanical exercise. Don't think too much about what you're doing. Just do it. The cost of the next level of debt would be 12% times 1 minus 0.40. So you see how the cost of debt jumped? And again, if we borrow that money, we'll mix it with equity money, our income money, and we'll spend on the projects. 7.2, is that right? Yeah, sorry about that. I got to move these over. That's 7.2. Okay, now the cost of internally generated equity. Remember, K sub S will be D1 over the price of the stock plus G. Now remember to use D1. Don't use D0. In this case, I gave you what they just paid for a dividend, which was $5. Now, what's the growth rate of their dividends, does it say? What was it? 9%, really? Boy, they're generous as hell. Okay. So in other words, we're going to need to convert that by $5 times 1 plus 0.09. So if we do that, we're going to get the cost of the income, their money that they earn, of their earnings as $5 times 1 plus 0.09 divided by the price per share of this stock right now, which is $50, plus 0.09, plus 0.09. Now make sure that you do this. Where you usually people make their big mistake, and sometimes I do too, is in doing this arithmetic here. $5 times 1.09 means the next dividend will be $5.45, and we're going to divide that by $50 per share, and then after that we'll add 0.09, not 9, 0.09. This is actual math now. And we're going to find out that the cost of their equity right now, the money, the owner's money that they've got from earnings is 19.9%. Look how much more equity costs than debt. Do you see that? It's just a large amount more. Your owners are expensive, but they're not near. Yeah. Yeah, maybe that. Yeah, that's a good idea. There we go. Well, I have to back it out a little bit. That's good. Yeah, there we go. Okay, now we've got that money. But what if we still need more money than $1 million that's in equity? We'll have to go to the brokers and say, sell some stock. And in that case, we would have the cost of new equity is D1 over the price minus the float plus G. Now, if we look up here, we see that the float on the stock, what does it say the float is? I probably gave it as a percentage, didn't I? 8%. So in other words, if we sell stock, we won't sell it for $50 a share. Well, we won't get $50. The brokers will take 8% of that. 8% of $50 is $4. So what we'll have here in this case will be $5 times 1 plus 0.09 divided by 50 minus $4, 8% of the price. Because every stock share that those investment bankers sell for us, they're going to keep $4 and give us 46. See how that's going to make the cost of new equity even worse than the cost of existing equity? If you do that, $5 times 1.09 divided by, and put this in parentheses, 50 minus 4 if you do that, and then plus 0.09, well, smack me, 20.85. Wow. New equity, if we borrow money, or I mean if we have to sell stock, now that's going to cost. Say that? Oh, I didn't. Yeah, I did. I'm sorry, I did, but I didn't write it there, plus 0.09. Sorry about that. Just testing you to see if you're watching. Now, this is how the nitty-gritty. Just do the formulas and get these numbers. Now we're going to say, okay, here's the thing. We need money for projects. We need money for projects. So, first dollar for the best project we have. I'm going to take 35 cents of that cheap debt that I borrowed, and I'm going to take 65% of my earnings, mix them together, and invest it. And I'll keep doing that until I run out of the cheap money that I borrowed. Then I have to say to the bank, we're going to start borrowing money at the higher rate. Here's what we mean by breakpoints. Look, I can get $250,000 cheap. 35% of every dollar I spend is going to be that cheap debt. So, what would that mean in terms of how much actual total money would I be able to go through? Because the debt dollars are only 35 cents of the total dollars. And the way you do that is you say, okay, breakpoint one here is going to be $250,000 at 35% of the total. So in other words, what I am saying here is that if I can get $250,000 cheap, that would constitute, mean that I had spent a total of $714,286. You see what I did there? If 35% of every dollar I spend is debt, I can spend up to $250,000 of debt. Well, that means that if that's 35% of all the money I spent that was cheap debt, I would go through $714,000. Because the rest of it would have been the equity, the earnings money that I was pulling out of my pocket. So in other words, when I have spent a total of $714,000, that's when I have to go back to the bank and suddenly the cost of capital jumps on me the first time. Okay, now we're in that higher cost of capital, but I've still got these earnings. I got $1 million in earnings that I'm spending. Okay, when do I run through that? Because once I've run through my earnings and I'm already paying the higher cost of debt, that's when I have to go and sell new stock. So in this case, breakpoint two would be when that $1 million of money that I earned that I'm using as 65% of my total money is gone. And I have to go to the brokers and say, sell stock. So my second breakpoint would be $1 million divided by 0.65. And that's at 1,058,538. $462. Yeah. Because they had $1,000,002 that they earned. They gave $200,000 to the... So basically they've got from their earnings. So at this point, at $1.5 million, a little more than that, they have blown all the money that they had earned, mixing it with debt along the way. Now, there's no breakpoint three here because those are the only two things that are going to happen. They can now keep going. They're paying the higher cost for debt. They're having the brokers sell expensive stock. And so now we can go over here and talk about the weighted average cost of capital. Now, this is where I stop. Well, I'm going to show you the formula. The weighted average cost of capital, I'm sorry, this is not the weighted. This is the marginal cost of capital. The MCC is going to be the weight of debt times the cost of debt plus the weight of equity times the cost of equity. I'm not going to do this for you, but I want you to know how to do it, and I'll say it. You started with cheap debt and cheap equity, so I'll show you the first one. So your first marginal cost of capital, your first marginal cost of capital is going to be the weight of debt in your portfolio, 0.35. What was the cost of the cheapest debt after taxes? Tell me. 6% plus the weight of equity in your capital structure times what was the cost of earnings? The existing shareholder. What was that? Go back and look for it. 19.9%. Do you see it? At first, we've got cheap debt and cheap equity making our total cost of capital. But then the next time, once we've run through that, and we will run through that, we have to go back and now talk to the bank for the next tier of capital of debt at 7.2%, but we still got earnings we're using, and we are going to do that. The marginal cost of capital will jump when we've run out of cheap debt. That was breakpoint one. Use a very straight ruler. Don't do what I'm doing here. Do as I say, not as I do. Seriously. Because the MCC, if you do that first one, 0.35 times 6% plus 0.65 times 19.9%, you get 14.34%. So in other words, the cost of my first $714,000 of money, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13:14 was this. But then it's going to jump times. I screwed that up, didn't I? That's not 14, is it? What was the cost of the debt? 0.35, clear. 0.35 times 6% plus 0.65 times 19.9%. 0.35 times 6% plus 0.65 times 19.9%. I'm sorry, I screwed that up. What do you get for that number?
0.87.
What is it?
0.87.
Yeah, I thought there was something wrong with that. Wait, no. Really? 0.35, for God's sake, someone else do it. I don't trust that guy. He's dodgy. 0.65 times 19.9% is 15.04. The next one, 0.35 times 7.2 plus 0.65 times 19.9 is 15.46%. Now, obviously, these are, it's going to jump. And you can get up to 1.5. You can get that much at that rate. And finally, I'll write the formula out for you. You are now using cheap debt, or the expensive debt, and you have now run through all of your earnings. So now you have to go to the brokers. And what did the brokers charge you for? What's going to cost you for new equity? And you'll find that that number is even worse, but now you can go on forever and ever. So the first $715,000, you get at 15.04% weighted average cost of capital. The next round of money, you're using more expensive debt, but you still got earnings left. You can get that at 15.46. But once you've used up your earnings, you're paying out the ass, the highest rate. Now, what you do with the investment opportunity schedule is you just take those and you rearrange them from the best to the last. So the best one here is Kansas City Sheltered Families. You'll spend $1.5 million, but you're going to get 18% out of that. So you draw in your first investment opportunity schedule out to there. Then you say, all right, if we get through that one, then the next one is 16% for Cedar Rapids Living Free Community. That'll be 16%. And that's going to get us 16% for $500,000. And what you're going to do is you're going to do those stepwise. Don't draw lines. They're just steps. If any project, any part of any project is underneath the cost of that project, that's where you reject. You take only projects that are completely above their marginal cost of capital. See this first project? It's obviously above all the costs of its capital. See the MCCs, how they're rising step, step, step? That first project is obviously above any cost that we could have for it. The second one, well, it looks like it's going to come in at 16% and it's going to cost us. But this last one, that might be a deal breaker on at least the third one or maybe the fourth one. So the entire trick for the payoff is to answer the question, which project should be accepted? You will draw these in with very sharp straight lines, because if you mess it, you could actually miss where a project breaks and inappropriately reject it or accept it. But that's what you have to do for the quiz that we'll open up tomorrow. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.